Listening to the Food Talk Show. Hello there, my name's Sue Nelson of the Food Talk Show. I'm excited. I know I shouldn't do this because actually we should do the Food Talk Show because we're really interested in food. We want to talk about all the latest things. It's very ethical and serious, but I'm never more excited when the studio is full of food and drink and stuff. Look at Guy's got a smile on his face as well.
Well, I've just eaten as well. So
I know, so you're all happy.
It's all good times.
Ollie's very excited because there's chilli. So I'm joined by Guy Routledge, who's co-founder of Food Rush, and Ollie Lloyd, who's the founder of Great British Chefs. Hi, guys.
Hello.
How are you doing? Are you as excited as me?
Well, I'm excited until the comment about quite how hot the chilli
we're about to taste. And do you know why we've got lots of nice spicy things here? Anybody
I'm sure you're going to tell us, Sue.
Well, we're joined by Pritesh Modi, who founded the World of Zing. The World of Zing. Hi, Pritesh.
I certainly did. Hi.
Hi.
It's a brilliant name for a company.
Zing.
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 It's just flavour. That was the idea.
Yep. Yeah.
It's just, we didn't want to be constricted by any products, any ethnicity, regions, anything. Zing is just flavour.
Just flavour.
It allows us, as you'll see soon, to do whatever
do
we
all
want.
Sorts of different things.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
So you're renowned, I would say, as a spice guru. Mm. Would you say that's a good description?
Yeah, allegedly. Yeah.
Good,
yeah,
spice guru. Yeah. And so much of a guru are you? You've obviously been on Sunday Brunch and BBC and loads of other television programmes, because people want to know more about spice. They want to know more about how to handle it, how to, you know, mix it, how to use it, and actually understand better. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I think for decades, really, how spices have been used, and even the spices that we now take for granted, have just become a bit dull and, you know, a bit commonplace, really. And there's this whole new world of spice emerging. So on one level, you've got a whole new kind of store cupboard of ingredients to start exploring. And number two is actually kind of, I think the way people have used spices historically has become a bit boring. It's done. We've not seen anything new. So at World of Zing, I wanted to look at ingredients that, you know, sometimes we have in our store cupboards or our speciality from another country, but just cross boundaries from food, drink, whatever we want, and just talk about flavour.
Yeah, the archetypal thing for me is getting your, what are they called, Schwartz?
The brand that makes spices and herbs.
There's this dusty clove powder or something that might have actually been only put in the jar 6 years ago and you've had it for 5 years yourself but actually there's nothing left, is there? None of that flavour's left, really.
There's
a great spice shop just dedicated to spice. I'm just trying to think where it is, and you walk in there and it's amazing.
What, in Notting Hill?
Yeah, and in there there's stuff I've never even heard of. I'd love to learn more about how you combine this spice with that, when you add it, should you crush it, should you, you know, buy it and then, you know, sort of mix it yourself, and I do think there's a real interest in it.
Well, I guess when you talk about learning, I think there's a fear with spices. Pick it up, smell it. We're all adults. We're all fairly adept in the kitchen. You smell it, you taste it, and then throw it into something and see what happens. You know, I think when people talk about learning, that it creates a barrier again. And at World of Zing, we just want to break all that barrier down. My motto, genuinely, when I'm cooking, is keep adding stuff until it tastes good. And you know, you'll get there. But you know, it's very touchy. But we're not scientists. We're not molecular other. We just love playing with stuff until it tastes good.
It's funny, isn't it? A lot of people, they do just, you know, they get scared of, oh, I don't really know. I don't even know how to pronounce this thing, let alone what it goes with. But just experiment.
What's the worst that could happen, right?
Break stuff and see what happens.
Throw it away and start again.
Yeah.
Ollie, have you got any thoughts on spices and some of your research? And also, you've got some fabulous chefs on Great British Chefs who really understand some of this.
I think one of the things that's really interesting about the world of spices is that if you imagined founding Great British Chefs in 1990, it would have been British-born chefs. Mm. And actually, what Great British Chefs is a celebration of the best cuisine that's going on in Britain today. And that's, you know, not people who are just from Britain, as in born in Britain. They're people from all over the world in terms of where they've come from. And some of them have ended up just coming here to work, you know, in a particular kitchen because it's one of the great Japanese restaurants in the world. Or others have set up entire empires dedicated to food. And I think if you look at the cuisines that people are cooking at home, you know, the only thing that, you know, so the top of the list outside British is Italian, but second is Indian. So amongst foodies, so I'm talking about, so recent work we've done, we looked at what we call committed foodies. So those are the kind of really sort of 7 million of them in the UK who are really committed to the world of food. You know, about, you know, 50% of them say they are cooking, 55% are saying they're cooking Indian food from scratch at home. And, you know, we've gone all the way down into Laotian cuisine and, you know, all, you know, like right down to the margins of the margins. And you do realize that people are cooking more and more stuff. But I think what's interesting is that what you're getting is more and more chefs sharing content and bloggers sharing content from all over the world, which is being shared in national newspapers and on sites like ours. And they ask for these ingredients. You go, what is number six?
Yeah.
And the fact is, Sainsbury's doesn't have it, Waitrose, Tesco's, none of these guys have it. And in the end, you have to either go to a specialist supermarket or go online. And I think in the world of online, that's what's happening. So
yeah, and that's one of the great things, the revolutions about online, is that you can get that and get it delivered to your door. I think the really interesting thing with what you're doing, Pradesh, though, is not aligning yourself to a single cuisine. No. I mean, and you're very clear about that, aren't you? You're saying, I want flavour, and, you know, chilli gets used in Portuguese cooking, it gets used in Thai, it gets used, you know, it's not a country
spice,
is it?
In terms of our core range is actually South American, is, you know, where where all the chilies are from. Mm. Or the most interesting chilies, certainly, and the largest variety of chilies. So actually our largest range in terms of spice and where our focus is in South American cuisine.
But I think, interestingly, so 31% of committed foodies are cooking Mexican food at home, right? And I think it's one of the cuisines that's served worst by the national supermarkets.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they have nothing.
Absolutely.
They don't even have the basic ingredients.
Absolutely. Well, they have really horrible flour tortillas that look just awful. Yeah. You know, and they have all that. They're very basic.
Well, they're rubbery, really, aren't they? They have really that basic, rubbery, stodgy, clangy texture.
It's all very basic. Mm. So shall we? Can you tell us a little bit more about chilies? Because I know you know a lot about chilies, and you're very interested in rare chilies as well.
Yeah.
But shall we start? I just want to see Ollie's face when he tastes this thing that I've got in front of me. Now, it is called It is called Piri Piri Naga Chili Ketchup. Am I going to get some revenge on him or
not? So again, right, so our ethos and sort of like Fight Club, the first rule of working at World of Zing is we're not allowed to talk about heat. We always talk about flavour. So whilst we've used Naga chilies in that one, which is hottest chili in the world.
Say, that's why I was worried about it. Yeah.
Ollie has just stopped mid-spoon to his mouth.
I'm just putting back the
and raised an eyebrow.
It's actually incredibly gentle. What I wanted to bring the flavour of the Naga out, not the heat. And what you'll find is that citrusy, garlicky, charred with just a gentle heat.
He's got a sneer on his face.
Come on.
Tell me, come on, because I don't
know.
I know
you're not allowed to say the word hot, but it's actually not that hot.
There you go.
I mean, it's interesting.
It's very citrusy. That's hot enough for me. Thank you very
but
much.
But no, but what's interesting is actually, you know, it's a real journey in your palate. You know, it's...
Oh, wow, yeah. Things going on there.
It reminds me almost of space dust. It feels like you've got little bits kind of going bing, bing, bing.
Zing.
In different corners of your mouth.
It's zinging everywhere.
Yeah. No, it's lovely.
And that's why we use the Naga specifically in that, is that it's got long flavour journey.
It's got a lot of garlic in there as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Not allowed to kiss anybody tonight.
No problem. My wife's Sri Lankan, so I'm massively into this.
You're allowed to kiss somebody.
What's fun is giving children this kind of stuff, because my son has this phrase where he says, can I have some of that? We say, no, it's chili. And he goes, oh, blow your head off. And that's just what he thinks chili is.
But so that Naga, a chili renowned having that citrusy...
The Naga's actually got a long, fruity flavour.
Fruity.
Once you get past the heat, so which is why we've paired it with the citrus. It stands up to all of the garlic, stands up to the tomato, but we've just paired the heat right down and just used it for the flavour.
It's hot enough for me.
There's plenty of flavour in there.
It's really good.
But I don't think... But that's not... Don't like chili,
it's lovely.
If you're sort of the sort of person that's scared of chili, that's not going to scare you.
Exactly. It's an entry point into something that people think is fearsome.
Okay. It's an entry point into the fearsome chili.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, okay.
It's an entry point into being frightened. So, would you like to try the pineapple and habanero
that
chili
is a bit
table
hotter.
Sauce?
That's a sort of a 7 out of 10.
So pineapple and habanero.
Okay,
so
that was 5 out of 10.
Yeah, so this is sort of 7-ish, 7 or 8.
Seven or eight.
So we've used again.
So what did you call the other one? Like three
five.
Or four.
That was about a five, four or five.
Go on then.
This is kind of smoky. I'm trying to smell it before I taste it, just in case I blow my taste buds off. But
there's a nice charred pineapple in there.
I'm declining at the moment. Just to go and watch them first.
You're safe.
You just do that deliberately.
Yeah. Isn't that good?
Yeah, the fruitiness is there, but it is definitely warmer.
Don't go too heavy.
It will get you on the back. You know. After a second or two.
That tasted really nice on the way in. I'm not so sure about it. Oh, my God. Ooh, wow.
That's really, really nice, though.
Well, obviously, we wouldn't sit and eat a hot sauce out of glasses as we are right now, sort of drink it.
Ollie probably would.
I love a bit of chili.
Just to let you know, we've just been joined by Sarah Hillary. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
From Be Tempted. Now I've tasted their stuff amazing, but a chocolatey. Are you into chilies, Sarah? No, you've just walked
in the
studio.
I love chilies.
Oh, we're going to have to try this.
Chocolate
thing,
and chilies, a great combo as well.
Yeah.
Have a go of the old pineapple habanero and see what you think.
So again, the reason we've used habanero there is super hot chilies in particular. So habanero is about the fourth, fifth hottest in the world.
That's hot.
They actually have...
Sorry, we should have warned you.
Sorry.
How is your public liability insurance?
It's 10 million, I think, so we're fine.
Yeah, they have an innate tropical flavour. Mm. So once you get past the heat, which is why we've paired it with the pineapple in that one, is that it really releases the tropical flavour flavor notes in the chilli itself.
So do you see these sauces as being, that's really delicious, as being things that you serve on the side of things, or is it more like marinades and...
Yeah, I mean, generally, they've been designed as table sauces.
Fine.
But, you know, we've got a barbecue sauce in the range as well, and I cooked up the other day, just marinated some chicken in orange juice and soy sauce, cooked it up and threw in the barbecue sauce.
When you go around to a dinner party with a friend, do you turn up with a bottle of wine or bottles of chili?
So it's either a bottle of cocktail that we're going to taste or a bottle of chili, depending on who it is.
Or both.
Or both.
If you really like it.
Yeah.
Mm. You see, I am frightened of chili. I've just tasted that pineapple and habanero again. It's lovely, as I said, on the way in. It's like very, I don't know, almost meaty, actually, I'll describe that. And then, oh, God, it gets you. It really does get you. But now it's going away. So sometimes when you have chili stuff, it's so strong that you just can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
Whereas that's gone.
I don't want to hurt you.
Whenever I end up talking about chili, I recall this experience. I went to the Caribbean once on holiday, and we sat down on the first night to just eat some food. You know, just been flying for however many hours, and we're just like, oh, just give me anything that sounds interesting. Some chili chicken, that sounds great. And it came, and it was a chicken breast that had been rolled in chili seeds, and it
rolled
was hot.
It was so hot.
I could barely eat it, and I like hot food, but.
Yeah.
It's this is amazingly delicate, you know, and it's not just like, wow, blow your head off. It's got so much more to it. It's really, really good stuff.
Well, that's very good. You've also got some chili oil here.
So this is my favorite, I think.
Five chili oil.
Yeah, so it's five different chilies into a chili oil, which I don't believe anyone's ever done. And again, the idea is to build on flavor. That's the one. So you've got naga, habanero, bird's eye, chipotle, so smoky, fruity, rich. All those flavours, all in one chili oil.
And so what would you do with chili oil? Just literally
what
put it
pizza.
You do with chili oil?
Exactly.
I was going to say, put it over a pizza. So if you want to add a little bit more, you know, if you've got
molasses. So
the main things
first.
You shouldn't have. You should basically chili oil shouldn't
ramen,
be used.
Put it in
on
ramen
to cook with. Never cook with chili oil. You burn off all the flavour.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, look.
Finish.
Well, look at him now.
Oh, controversial.
See, you've done something wrong there, have you?
No, I mean Look, I mean, it's we have a bottle of chili oil beside our, you know, homemade chili oil beside our hob, and I will definitely sprinkle it on stuff and use it. I think you can cook with it, but it adds a deeper flavour when you've cooked it off.
Yeah, potentially. I think just with ouch.
We've just lost Sue. Sue was going to present this program, but actually now
we're going to have to call it a day early.
Yeah, it's really problematic.
She has literally left the room.
She has left the room. We're going to improvise from here.
What about if you made
she's actually
a chili
lying
brownie
on
though?
The ground.
So we're actually talking with someone about making a chili chocolate collaboration.
Yeah. Mm.
And again, we've done some work in the past where we've picked the perfect chili with. So if you look at Pasilla chilies, they've got a lovely raisin kind of flavour in a brownie. Is absolutely unbelievable.
Ooh, maybe
absolutely
we could do a collaboration.
Absolutely. Or we've got the chocolate habanero and stuff like that.
But it's interesting when you have hot chocolate in Mexico, there is chili within that. And I have to say, for me, sprinkling a bit of chili into hot chocolate is just one of the great pleasures in life. And if you have breakfast, if you've got sort of, delicious savoury pancakes for breakfast, the number of times there is chili served at breakfast is, I think the only thing we don't put chili on our household is probably granola.
I think that's fair enough. Yeah.
I can find the chili to go with granola.
It's a great challenge.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
It is a great challenge.
Or maybe without granola, we can just have something else, like eggs.
Let's not do it.
Sue is
really
back.
Sorry. I had to go out to the studio because that was just
Sue's body double has now come in.
Am I calling my insurance? Are we using yours on this? I've got decent
streaming
liability.
My nose is streaming. I've just had a tooth out yesterday. I think it may have either killed or cured that. That's for sure. Can we move on now from chili? Because I've had enough of chili.
So can I throw one more chili thing in? I actually think that you're happier if you're eating chili.
Oh, it's a fact.
Yeah. I mean, I get sad if I'm not eating chili.
Well, we worked with King's College London on the physiological science of chilies. It's the first project of its kind and how it actually affects your mood and things like that and pain and stuff. So essentially what happens is like you have a chili. It's the same physiological reaction as your body being set on fire. Which is why you sweat.
As
which
Sue
is,
has just experienced.
As I just found out. You sweat, blood rushes all over the place. So your body thinks it's being set on fire, drops a load of happy chemicals into your brain.
To try and cheer you up.
To try and cheer it's you up so and quell the pain. So we are happier, happier when
like,
eating chilies.
I do like chili. I do crave chili. I think it's quite addictive. So when you've been abroad somewhere nice and you eat fish. If I go to Portugal, I just eat fish and vegetables all 2 weeks, and then you're thinking when you get home, I need some chili now.
Yeah.
I just don't like it too strong, and it's affected my nasal passages and everything at the moment.
Amazing.
You should try these, Ollie. These are
spice mixes.
So I've got carrot Mary mix, spice mix, and Bloody Mary spice mix.
So we did this in association. This is kind of showing how we cross the boundaries in food and drink perfectly. So. Kettle One Vodka approached us to reinnovate and reinvent the Bloody Mary. So I created a series of spice blends where instead of using Tabasco, Worcester sauce, all these kind of things, using really interesting chilies. So all you need is a teaspoon of the spice, tomato juice, beetroot juice, cucumber juice, or carrot juice. You choose a juice and vodka, and that's it.
Spice
and you've
it
got a Bloody Mary.
Wow. Right, Sunday brunch sorted.
You like that, do you?
I do. Well, this is so complex. The one
that
I've got
is lovely. I love that carrot.
The carrot Mary mix.
Don't really have that.
I can't wait.
Sour,
really
tingly, and aromatic.
I've just had that though. Ooh. That's really nice. Have a quick taste of that.
So, what's that cube?
That's got a good amount of kick in it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a proper kind of Bloody Mary tomato juice esque. Really signed up.
I mean, I haven't got the sweats already from the night before. This will really generate the sweat.
I love Worcester sauce. Really I absolutely love Worcester sauce. And I'm not that keen on Tabasco. I think it's a bit of a blunt instrument. But I do like Worcester sauce. But for me, it doesn't quite. Were you laughing at me again?
I like the blunt instrument part. It's an instrument.
It's just hard pepper. It's not complicated.
Yeah.
When my mother-in-law was in hospital the other day, she actually said the first thing she wanted was, it wasn't like, when are my daughters coming to see me? It's like, can you bring me my Tabasco?
All right. Okay. Well, she always disagrees with me. But I quite like Worcester sauce.
You probably need it with the hospital food.
But if you put that into a proper Bloody Mary, it just alters the taste profile so much.
Destroys
and it's not complicated.
It.
And it is a little bit salty. That's really nice, don't you think? That carroty one. That carrot mix is lovely.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Is there celery salt?
No. To be fair, I've forgotten what's in that one. You can read the ingredients.
So it says a carrot Mary spice mix.
The problem with me is I'm messing around so much constantly.
Yeah.
So these are going live probably in the next couple of weeks. They'll be available in the next couple of weeks.
Mm. So how many products in total do you have then? Would you not know that either?
I don't know, maybe 40.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so we've got our cocktails, we've got our range of rare chilies, the chili sauces, the Bloody Mary mixes.
That's the mango powder, I think.
Yeah, that's the amchur.
Yeah, mango powder is
right.
What gives it that lovely, interesting
taste.
And
then you've got Cuba peppercorns in there, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's what's giving that lovely tingle.
Giving a flashback
tingle
to creating that.
Yeah.
So when you asked that question of how many products, I imagined you'd say way more than 40. Mm.
We had more than 40, and right. Now we're kind of we've been going 2.5 years, and now we've kind of figured out what works, our little position, and where we really want to concentrate. So we've kind of pared down our range, and just being more creative and really focusing on creating incredible products.
So Sarah, your views on chili? Are you a chili fiend?
I love chili. Oh. It goes really well in a chili brownie. Mm. We did have a chili brownie. But it's been taken off temporarily, and as you were saying earlier, it really depends on the type of chili that you use.
Yeah.
Because some of them you get a really like a searing heat when it first goes into your mouth. But then with a really great chocolate brownie, what you need is to get the chocolate first, and then the sweetness, and then
control
the warmth at the end. That to me would make the perfect chili brownie.
Any recommendations on what chili to use?
Yeah, as I said earlier, I think the pasilla is probably the one. It's got lovely raisin kind of notes. Mm. So you'll have all that fruitiness in there. And you'll have a little bit of warmth. Then the creaminess from the chocolate will just wash it away.
So then we've got all these sort of seems quite related to me. So we've got spice mixes, we've got sauces, you know, oils. That all now you've suddenly got drinks.
Yeah.
Did you always intend to do that? Or
that was where the whole project started.
Ah, so drinks. You started off with that first.
Yeah. So it was kind of again, kind of this whole crossing boundaries. My professional background is actually in the drinks industry. So I was marketing director of loads of distilleries. I spent basically my whole life as a professional drunkard, getting paid to travel the world, judging cocktail competitions and spirits competitions and launching drinks brands.
Brilliant.
So again, kind of using my food hat on, my family are one of the oldest spice merchants in the country. When I launched World of Zing, it was just about flavor innovation. I was just seeing what bartenders were doing, ingredients that they were using, processes, and I wanted to create a ready at-home solution that you could have the best cocktails that you find in the best bars at home.
Because a lot of people at home, they can't be bothered with all of the equipment and the faffing around of making a cocktail. But to have these kind of pre-mixed ones is a smart move.
I have to say, and I'm really not lying here, Negroni is my favourite cocktail. That's what I go for. Yeah. And the way I make it is three equal parts Campari, a really interesting sort of red martini or vermouth, you know, something with loads of character, and gin. So those three parts are in equal measure. Slice of orange in there, bit of orange skin. That for me is like the perfect cocktail. Now this
recipe
is yours.
It's going to be on the website later on.
This is yours. So let's have a little taste.
So this is aged in a Bordeaux wine cask. Using a couple of little tricks as well. We've
not bad.
Hang on. So
not
would you? So you, would bad. You just serve this straight over ice?
Yeah, as a normal Negroni, or you can even add a splash of soda or Prosecco in there, because we've got our own bitters in there as well, which adds a more sort of floral note to it, a
not
lighter
bad.
Finish. Mm. That Bordeaux wine cask adds richness onto the palate, and then we don't use Campari either. We use sacred rosehip. A British alternative to Campari, less sweet, again, nicer, more complex flavour profile.
Wow. What do you think of that,
Tanqueray Ollie? Tanqueray gin in there.
Do you like it? See, I love
that
Italian
is a rock star
Negroni. Sour cocktails.
See, I...
No, he doesn't like it. Yes, he does.
I had a Negroni the other day, and I suspect it's just a bit too bitter for me. And I was like, I didn't... It might have been the stage in the evening I had it at. So it might not be the Negroni's fault. But that, I think, actually is delicious. And it's got the right combination of sweetness and sourness. At times, it can be too
bitter.
Too bitter.
And too cutting. Again, the aging process on this, it softens it all up.
Yeah.
So
you need
you've
to
just
get
got
the
this
right
really nice
red
soft flavour profile.
Because that's what makes all the difference to me.
Interesting. The last Negroni I had was we went to a pop-up with the guys at Grub, who make the insect bars, and they did an aged Negroni with buffalo worm in it, and it was really, really interesting.
Okay. What did the buffalo worm bring to the party?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you. I'd had far too many Negronis.
I wouldn't be keen, because I might drink some. Sarah, what did you think of that Negroni?
I quite liked it, and I wonder if it would be available in individual packs. Individual bottles?
Yeah, single shots. Yeah, they're available now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We actually do a travel pack.
And
we're...
picnic, you call it picnic pack.
I mean, no, it's literally designed
when
to go through
tube.
Airport security. Like, four little 50ml bottles. And we're actually launching a Negroni collection as well, including a white Negroni, which has no one seen.
That's nice.
Which is utterly epic. I'm so excited about that. So excited.
Really good. So before we go on to your background in spices, can we taste the other one that you've bought?
Yeah, so you've got the Persian lime and nori margarita.
Margarita. Now, you're a fan of... Look, guys, straighten
it. I'm passing it over
you
to
weren't.
You soon.
So you go first, because I know you, you like it.
You haven't finished that one then?
You like a bit of margarita, don't you?
You might want to put a bit of water in your cup.
I like that kind of... Again, we're going to get some zing with the lime, I guess.
So the traditional margarita recipe is...
So you've got tequila, Cointreau, bit of sugar syrup, lime. This is based on a Tommy's margarita, which is agave, lime and tequila. But what we've done, this for me is my proudest drink, because lime, everyone said it couldn't be done.
Okay, well, lime is a big component of margarita, of course.
Exactly.
Most of us use the agave syrup to balance that out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cointreau quite often.
Yeah, so that's a classic.
Do people add Cointreau? Just give it that slightly orangey taste.
Yeah, it's just is the recipe.
You don't want it.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
You don't want that.
Let's say this is based on what we call a Tommy's margarita, so it doesn't have the Cointreau element.
And then the tequila. Tequila, what type of tequila is that important?
So we've got, two types of tequila, a reposado and a bianco, so aged and unaged, adding a bit of richness. You've got Persian lime macerate in there, which means that it's there's no shelf life issues on this. You can keep the bottle essentially forever. And also adds this lovely sherbety flavour. Then nori seaweed. The idea being there's no salt on the rim. The salt is in the liquid itself. So you have this mouth-watering effect.
The smell is very interesting.
That's a dance party in your mouth. That's amazing.
The smell, I can taste that seaweed smell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good.
And you're not talking calm dancing.
Not calm.
Oh my god, that wasn't what I expected at all.
That's really
you're not
going to
run out again, are you?
Is it too lemony?
It's very lime.
Limey.
Mm.
No, I like that, but it's not like sharp and bitter lime. It's almost sweet.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm surprised by the sweetness in that.
Yeah, yeah.
Fruity lime.
It's supposed to be like a sherbet. You remember when we were kids? And it's like
sherbet dip dabs.
Basically, sherbet dip dabs with tequila. Mm.
That's how they should always be served.
I think these could be dangerous, actually. They could be too drinkable.
That is beautiful.
Beautiful. Mm. Well, there you go. Beautiful.
Thank you.
So
I'll be buying that.
Just to describe these bottles, are they 70 centilitres?
50.
So the 50 centilitres,
mm-hmm.
You put them in the fridge, probably 12 to 14 units. So we're probably talking about
You've got about seven serves in there.
Pretty healthy servings in there. That's good for an evening. How much are they?
They're about £24.
About 24. So what if you were having a dinner party and you were going to make cocktails? Why would you buy all the individual ingredients when those are so good? Because there's quite. I mean, buying.
It's so convenient as well.
Mm.
And ingredients that you wouldn't find anyway on the shelves.
Yeah, which
if you wanted to mix your own margaritas or your own Negronis, they would never come out tasting like that, because these have got so much more complexity and depth and intelligence.
There is one worry though, is that I don't make Negroni at home because I can't be bothered because there's so many ingredients and then I have to make it. So I just like, we'll have a glass of wine or something. If that was in the fridge,
it wouldn't stay there for very long.
It's all ready to go. It's a bit tempting.
But actually, it's nice to. I'm a big fan of whiskey. So you know, Friday night, the kind of the large ice cube, really good single malt is just. We've reached the weekend.
Is it?
You should try our Manhattan. I should have bought that as well.
Manhattan?
We do indeed, yeah.
That is actually one of my favourite. Old Fashions actually are my kind of like...
Old Fashions and Manhattans all day long.
I find them a bit too bitter personally, but...
No, I'm liking that.
So, that is very good.
While we'd like to drink some more, can you just talk to us so that we can do that?
The show's over to you. We're just going to talk about these two.
Please hold it up for the next half hour. Just explain your family's background in spices and how you were brought up.
Sure.
It's a real informative part of the way that you look at these foodstuffs.
Fully. I mean, so I look at it almost like legacy based on what my grandfather did, but he came over 60 odd years ago, you know, typical sort of Asian immigrant story, no money in his pocket, worked Chris factories, worked for Walkers, whatever. And
where from? India?
From India, yeah. Yep. And then set up a little shop in Hessel Street in Wapping, just a little corner shop. And
sort of Docklands.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And very quickly became famous as the go-to guy for all the spices from back home. And before you knew it, that corner shop had turned into a warehouse, which had turned into a bigger and a bigger and a bigger warehouse. And now, you know, I say 50, 60 years on now, it's one of the oldest and most famous spice merchants. So we work with every Michelin-starred Indian chef, for example, will only buy from us. You know, it's just a huge heritage. And
So growing up then, did you sort of help out in the shops or did you just get a great education? Did you know, did they teach you all about spices?
Well, my dad can't make toast. So genuinely,
your dad.
Why would he want to make toast? He's probably making much better things.
Exactly. I mean, he has no idea. It's unbelievable. Kind of, he can tell you what a good spice is. He has no idea what the hell happens next. Mm. But what I did do was spend a lot of time in professional kitchens. So I'd go out, hang out with my dad, and all his mates are all chefs and you know, restaurateurs, etc. So I was constantly around great food. My family are great cooks. My mum's a great cook, etc. So food was all I really ever knew.
I'm so jealous.
Hanging out in the kitchens, you know, eating with the chefs and stuff like that is unbelievable. Yeah. Mm. So it completely formed this vision of once you've got good food in your belly, what really matters, right? Mm. Is, you know, it's such happiness.
Yeah. Wow. So why were you not tempted to go into the cooking side of it? I mean,
I don't really know, to be honest. I mean, my family have always owned restaurants, and I guess I always saw actually how difficult restaurants are.
It's antisocial and it's underpaid.
Restaurants are incredibly hard work. And so I went into the marketing. I studied law and didn't do a day of law and sort of fell into food marketing, much to the concern of my dad. It was just like,
I've spent
again,
all this money on your education.
Basically. It's amazing how many times we hear that kind of story.
Real kind of classic, typical Indian parent as well, you know, like, you know, just go and get a proper job, you know. Get a profession, you know, and I sort of was messing around in drinks and events and all kinds of stuff.
Ollie, for Great British Chefs, your favourite sort of Indian chefs that you're really keen on at the moment?
We work with all the big Indian chefs in the UK, so Alfred Prasad, Vineet Bhatai, the whole crew. Can I remember all the four?
What I'm saying is there any that you are particularly impressed
with? I think what's interesting is there's a guy called Alfred Prasad who used to run Tamarind, and he's recently, so Indian heritage, classic Indian food, like one of the absolute legends in the industry. He's just opened up a Greek restaurant on Brick Lane. It's interesting because I think, again, what's happening is, you know, Indian cuisine, I think, has been quite kind of pigeonholed in some ways. And it's like there's Indian cuisine and then there's modern Indian cuisine. And I lived in Bombay for a year and have certain issues with modern Indian cuisine. So I think at times it actually lacks the depth of flavour and the authenticity and the interest that actually a lot of really authentic recipes have. But I think what's interesting is it is beginning to break out more and people are beginning to innovate with Indian food. And we are beginning probably to see a new wave where different cultures are crossing over and people are doing different things.
Not even that. We're seeing actual Indian food now, which for me is most exciting.
As opposed to anglicising.
The curry house, chicken tikka masalas and all these kind of things.
But they're always authentic places in the UK.
Yeah, but not like there are now.
No.
You know, now there are, in the last year, there's probably 30 new actual Indian restaurants that I would like to eat at.
Yeah.
You know, like genuinely, you know, I genuinely love to eat at. I mean, and they're using really authentic recipes. Mm. The final presentation might be different.
Yep.
I was at a restaurant called Roller Waller recently, and they do basically naan rolls, wraps, amazing. They've got a vindaloo lamb on the dish, slow cooked vindaloo, you know, a proper vindaloo with all that vinegar, that lip puckering kind of flavour in a naan. So I say, whilst the presentation, or you've got places like Cricket, who are their Kerala fried chicken, so all those lovely authentic South Indian flavors just in the format of fried chicken, but the flavor is there. An Indian person would eat that from India and recognize it as their own.
See, I actually
whereas
feel
we never had that here.
I actually feel that the sort of because the high street Indians can often be so bad. High street Indian restaurants can be so bad, and then you've had these amazing Indian chefs in the last 10, 15 years. I think they've been a little bit worried about breaking out of the Indian food thing because then they're labelled as being, you know, that awful word, you know, where somehow it's you know, they're fusing, this fusion thing. They're so petrified of it. I think they've sort of, you know, stayed in it. Whereas now they don't seem to be afraid of that. They say, well, who cares about fusion? I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that.
But I think your point also about regionality is really interesting because we are starting to see, you know, Keralaean food is completely different from, you know, northern Indian
food.
Absolutely.
I mean,
and actually you start to see, you know, what's a Calcutta restaurant? Actually, you know, when you start to see that kind of stuff,
correct,
that's really interesting, because the food of India is as complicated in some ways as the food of Europe.
It's exactly that. Every region.
And yet no one has any idea about that.
Mm. Absolutely.
And that's really exciting.
But with a lot of the high street ones as well, they're playing it safe because they're catering to the mass market and they're trying to keep it cheap.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fair. Fair enough.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then it's really exciting that
the high street restaurants aren't owned by Indians. They're owned by Bangladeshis who have grown up on this completely different fusion food for themselves. Like they own that area. Okay. And it's really interesting is that it's a bit disappointing really that we don't see them actually championing the food that they eat at home. Because again, growing up, I would always eat the staff curry. I would never eat what people in the restaurant were eating. If I was in a curry house around the back, it would be the staff curry. And that was the
much better.
That was the dish. And now I look at it, I look back on those days and go, you guys have missed a complete trick. Because curry houses are dying and all they had to do was serve the food that they actually eat,
which would have been cheaper to prepare anyway,
cheaper, more delicious, actually authentic,
Well, should we have a little break? I think I might have a little bit another Negroni. No, I'm fancying a curry now. You've been talking about that as well. Fancying Negroni.
Really, I think we might need your list of top curry. You said there are 25 or 30 in the last year. I think I need that
Take
list.
Take some notes, shall we? Take some notes. So we're just going to have a little break for a minute, and then we're going to talk much more to Sarah Hillary, who is a Food Talk Award winner.
Award-winning, delicious, gluten-free, so we'll
talk about that. And in the meantime, we'll have a little break. And we're going to listen to Rend Platings and Sweet Leaf having a chat to us. So we'll be back in a minute.
Okay, so it's Harry and I'm still at the Allergy and Free From show. It's day three, it's in the afternoon and it's very busy. And I've got two people with me now. And we're actually at the stand of Sweet Leaf and I've got Brian Hall, the brand manager. And I've also got Rend from Sugarwise. We'll start with you, Brian. Can you tell me a little bit about Sweet Leaf and the products that you've got on display today?
So Sweet Leaf is in response to concerns people have about the amount of sugar that's in their diets. Sweet Leaf comes from a sweetener called stevia. That's a plant that actually is sweeter than sugar, but provides all of the sweetness and flavor and taste you expect from sugar, but without any of the calories or negative health impacts you can get from sugar. And so we've just come to the show this year receiving an overwhelming response from all the visitors that have been just dying to find good, low-sugar alternatives that taste just as good as what they're used to.
Yeah, I think that's quite an important thing at the moment. We see a lot of sort of soft drinks that's just completely full of sugar. But obviously, I'm looking at your stand now and I see water drops, and they look like they're quite popular with people coming up to them. Are they one of your sort of flagship products?
So they're one of our more popular products at the show today. And what water drops are is it's a liquid stevia sweetener that's got some flavoring. And the idea is that you drop a squeeze into clear or still or sparkling water, and it can create a delicious, sweet, refreshing drink that has no free sugars, has no calories, and has no artificial ingredients whatsoever. And so people have been really taking a shine to these because they take a little sip and they say, wow, this is so sweet and so delicious, it must have sugar in it. We explain to them that no, it has no sugar whatsoever. It just has natural stevia sweetener that we brought from America that we are delighted to share with the people of Great Britain.
Fantastic. And as a result, you're certified by Sugarwise. So, Ren, could you tell me a little bit about what Sugarwise are and what you do?
So Sugarwise is like a certification for food and drink that's low in added sugars. So whenever people see the Sugarwise label on a food or drink, they know that it's low in any of the kinds of sugars or sweeteners that they need to worry about. Because as you may know, there's a lot of confusion about sugar, and it goes by lots of different names. It can be hidden in food and drink. And also manufacturers, you know, can make claims, you know, perhaps not even on purpose. They can make claims that are, you know, incorrect about sugars and sweeteners in their food and drink. So it just helps clarify it for them.
And am I right in thinking you work sort of fairly close with the government with what you do as well?
Yeah, we hold summits in Parliament. The next one's up in September in the UK Parliament. Also, we hold them in the European Parliament. And yeah, we hold a lot of events and we bring together stakeholders on sugar and people who really want to make a difference. So we're so grateful to have the support of organisations like Sweet Leaf, who are our first founding member. because we think that between us, we can make a real impact on the nation's health and global health as well. Because if people can just reduce the amount of sugar that they consume, and if they can do it in such a way that it's not painful for them, because it's one thing just taking away the nice stuff, but it's another thing not having anything to replace it with. And when we have this solution, solutions like Sweet Leaf, these solutions really empower people to take charge of their sugar intake and take charge of their health and their weight and all of these problems. You know, they can vanish without them making any sacrifices on flavor or on the kind of lifestyle that they want to enjoy.
And so how many brands and products is it that you actually work with in total?
We work with around 50 different companies. They're getting larger and larger. It used to be a number of smaller producers, and now we're getting onto larger brands. So, for example, this September, the Sugarwise label is appearing on Robinson's Fruit Shoot Bars, which is a substantially large brand, as well as obviously having international organizations involved like Sweet Leaf. And we've certified just over 300 products since our launch in March 2016. So the last time I was at this show, we had just a handful of products certified, and we had only just started our very exciting journey.
Absolutely. So, I mean, Brian, how important is it for you as a company, obviously Sweet Leaf, to have the Sugarwise certification sort of behind you?
Well, it's tremendously important because Ren's put a lot of the groundwork to raise awareness of all the hidden sugars that are in products. And to have that trusted mark on our products really helps people find a shortcut to say, I recognize Sugarwise. I recognize that's a mark that means this is a better for me option. But I also know that I'm curious to know a little bit more about Stevie and about Sweet Leaf because of it. We actually found there are quite a few misperceptions about sugars. And oftentimes people think that natural sugars like honey and maple syrup are good for you or are better for you than sugar because they don't contain sugar. We found one lady yesterday, she came up and she said, well, maple syrup, that must be free from sugar. And I explained to her that it's actually mostly sugar. And she said, even the maple syrup that comes from Canada. And I said, yes, even the maple syrup that comes from Canada, it's all got sugar in it. And so what Rend has been doing is educating people about the dangers of free sugars and about how replacing those doesn't have to be a chore. It doesn't have to be a sacrifice that it's impossible to make. And we found that to be a tremendously valuable partnership for us and will continue to be for many years.
And bakery is so confusing for people because they go into the sugar alternative section. And how do they differentiate between those sugar alternatives that are presented, agave and coconut nectar? And there are an awful lot of high free sugar products, like Brian was saying, in the sugar alternative center section of the supermarket. So they are going looking for alternatives, and they're already educated, and they're already wanting to make a positive decision. So what we want to do is just help them to look out for the Sugarwise label, to let them know that this really is a genuine sugar alternative that can help them reduce their sugar intake.
Absolutely. And I mean, I was looking at the statistic before I came here. Obviously, the visitor numbers here grow each year, the exhibitors as well. I guess for both of you, that's just an encouraging thing, because for you, Brian, obviously, you're in a market that's growing. And for yourself, Ren, it's more companies that you could work with, more companies that can get certified by Sugarwise.
Yeah, it's been extraordinary to see the response from people. They come and they try the product. They say, this must have, you know, sugar. And we explain to them that it has none. And then they're just delighted. And what they do is they tell me, where can I find this? And we tell them a few of the retailers that they can find our products. But then we tell them, go to your local supermarket, go to the retail that you shop at, bring them a sample of this and tell them to stock it. And there's a lot of demand. And what we found is retailers, sometimes they're a little hesitant to try something new that's better for you because they're worried that there won't be the demand from the consumers to really help to move it and to create the turnover. But this show is proof positive that there is a huge groundswell of people that just are demanding these products and just haven't been able to find good options yet. And with Ren's promoting the awareness of low sugar products and products that are certified sugar-wise, and us and our efforts to help educate people about natural alternatives to sugar that have no calories or sugar, those three groups, consumers, SugarWise, and Sweetleaf, have been able to, I believe, create a massive movement that's going to continue to build and build in the UK and beyond.
Absolutely. Well, good luck. Where can people find out more about Sweetleaf?
You can find out about us on our website, which is sweetleaf.com. And we have a separate site that's dedicated to SugarWise, sweetleaf.com/SugarWise. That's where you find information about us. And for SugarWise,
it's www.sugarwise.org.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for chatting to me, and good luck with the remaining few hours of the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harry.
So we're back here with Sarah Hillary, who's from Be Tempted, and Pritesh Modi, World of Zing. Managed to get another little bit of Negroni down me. Obviously, all in the pursuit of research.
I apologise in advance if this show, second half of the show, goes
too swimmingly. I'm really pleased to be joined by Sarah because when we had the incredible Food Talk Awards at Oxo Tower a few weeks back, what we did is all the people who were there, all foodies, all food producers themselves. I mean, it was an amazingly informed bunch of people who, you know, are looking at stuff all the time. Mm. We had a very good and experienced judging panel, and they were absolutely unanimous in having Be Tempted. This they're called Flourless Brownie Classic on the Free From section, and these are gluten-free, not that you would know. And we had a judge there who said, so I said, oh, can you just give me little quotes that I can write down for each of these? And they said, shut the door and pass the plate, is what they said.
Oh, I love that.
It was that good.
I love that.
So this is one of the categories that we didn't taste on the night. It wasn't one of the...
No. It wasn't one they voted for. Right. This was the free from. Yeah. And there's so many amazing free from stuff now. So to win that on top of all the other things was amazing.
Absolutely.
So I've tasted these before. You haven't. Anybody like a little bit of a brownie? Are you sweet tooth?
I'll fight you for one now.
Go on then. You start. Now, you would never know.
Since you bought so many wonderful gifts.
Would you like some chilli sauce?
No. What's so nice is you get this oozy thing coming out of the middle, and I don't even particularly like chocolate. So see what you think.
So these are flourless.
Yeah,
made
no
with flour. Ground almonds, free-range eggs, Belgian chocolate, egg whites, and it's just delicious.
Completely gluten-free. You'd
the
never
texture
know.
Is amazing.
Mm, the texture
Thank
is incredible.
The, which is the real giveaway, isn't it, with this kind of thing?
Mm.
Yeah, isn't usually they're really grainy and
dry.
Phenomenal. Yeah, dry, yeah.
Mm. Mm. So you can see why that's the winner of the free-from category in the whole year of all the stuff that we tasted. Impressed by that.
Mm. It's lovely.
Mm, it is very, very good. Everybody's going to fight to take those home. But you bought some other stuff as well.
I did. So
and just tell us about gluten-free. More and more people are choosing gluten-free, you know, for various reasons. But of course, if you've got a real problem with gluten, you can be seriously ill. So it's important to be able to buy some stuff that's been prepared properly for those sorts of people.
Absolutely. So there's around 1% of the population in the UK that are celiac. So that is an actual diagnosed intolerance to eating anything with wheat or gluten in it. Mm. But then there's also about an extra 3% of people that don't eat gluten by choice. So that could be from a lifestyle perspective. And just because I'm a firm believer in everything in moderation, and I think a lot of people are too. So
sorry about the crackling in the background. Everybody's passing bits of brownies
around. It's fine. I'll have one later. But a lot of people are choosing to go gluten-free by choice because if you eat too much wheat in your diet, you can feel sluggish and tired all the time. So if you, and the Western diet is so heavily focused on wheat that if you reduce it, you can get more energy.
So you can, I mean, those brownies there that we've just had have got no flour in at all, no wheat in at all. You would not know. Mm-mm. And that's the point of these sorts of things for me is I can reduce my gluten with no concessions to taste whatsoever.
Well, the trouble is that so many of them aren't very good. And so, you know, if you are in that unfortunate situation where you can't eat what is, you know, in so much of the food that is available on the shelves, that you end up with this, you know, subpar offering that, you know, but this is excellent.
It is
really,
very good,
really
isn't
excellent.
It?
Thank you.
I didn't sort of realise the sort of, you know, celiac thing, but my daughter's celiac, and she was just in hospital, in and out and in and out for 6 months, a year, like just really ill. We just couldn't work it out. I could not believe that that is what it can do to you. And as a mother, of course, going, "Don't be ridiculous. Just eat that French stick. It'll be fine." But it's serious.
Yeah,
it's serious, and it's a real problem. For you know, she has to avoid everything and actually be very careful about eating out, because she can never be sure that somebody's going to do it properly.
Yeah.
And do you want to be in A&E later on, 2 hours later? No, not really.
Yeah, strict standards are so important in gluten-free, especially in restaurants. A lot of restaurants prepare food and they say that it's gluten-free, but what they really mean is that it's no gluten-free containing ingredients. Yeah. Sorry, no gluten-containing ingredients. Mm-hmm. And there's a risk for celiacs there for cross-contamination. Even the slightest amount can really affect a celiac.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do remember meeting your daughter on the night.
You did, because she's a great fan of your stuff. She went, oh, it's them.
Well, there was a period when I was eating gluten-free for health reasons. And the number of times I would go into a restaurant and ask the staff, like, not just like specific details about how it was prepared, but like, which things on this menu can I choose? And they would have to say, oh, hang on a second, I'll have to go and consult with somebody. And they just didn't have that information ready at hand.
It's the cross-contamination thing that's the issue, mostly.
Yeah.
You do have to have a separate area in the kitchen if you've got a restaurant, and that's the bottom line, isn't it?
You do, yeah. Mm. With us, we've got a dedicated gluten-free factory. I say factory, it's a really small 1,000 square foot bakery in a converted railway arch, which is quite fun. But fully dedicated gluten-free site from the point of, you know, even with our pest control, it's gluten-free because we don't want to... I know it's really... It probably sounds really ridiculous and slightly paranoid, but we think if we're going to have a fully dedicated gluten-free site, we need to... Everything needs to be gluten-free.
Yeah. Mm. And is that dedicated to just you, or do you share it with others?
No, it's just ours. Mm. So we opened it... I opened it about 14, 15 months ago in East London. Leytonstone.
Oh, cool.
Really fun. Really great location. Up and coming.
Ollie, any trends in terms of the gluten-free thing?
Interesting. So when we did our big national research to look at, you know, trends in the UK about 2 months ago, one of the questions we asked about what are people avoiding? And I'd heard figures around, you know, meat avoidance and fish avoidance. I hadn't heard actually the data about gluten. And so we asked about gluten or wheat. And actually the numbers are higher from our survey than you quoted.
Oh,
so
okay.
Interestingly, 6% of the UK... is saying that they are avoiding gluten or wheat. That number increases to 11% amongst 18 to 24 year olds.
Wow.
And I think this is what you're kind of seeing, which
that's
is
one in 10.
And,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So the same thing is true. So nationally, 10% of the UK avoid meat, 22% of 18 to 24 year olds. So there's definitely something going on in a younger generation that they are I'm going to assume it's actively choosing rather than there is a higher. Not that I've seen any data. There's a high incidence of particular requirements to avoid things, but they're actively choosing to be more kind of, you know, as the buzzword is, flexitarian about these things. I think there is more choice going on. And so I think that, you know, if gluten is important at a national level, it's even more important at a younger generational level.
Mm. And are you finding that with spices? Is that a generational thing that perhaps younger people are much more interested in combining and where it's coming from?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just reflective of eating culture now, isn't it? So without using the fusion word now, the lines are so much more blurred, and everything is a melting pot. London is a melting pot if we're going to talk about where we are and where we as World of Zing are influenced by.
But you can say that of all the key cities around the UK.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess, you know, younger people want to then try what they've eaten out. And so there's definitely a huge interest in more interesting chilies. And our customers are generally of the younger variety.
Mm. So Sarah, what's next for you? You've got a really nice range here. So on the table now, we've got Madagascan vanilla and flaked almonds. We've got raspberry white chocolate and pistachio. And then we've got matcha green tea and macadamia nut.
Yeah,
keep experimenting?
Well, the thing is, we've had this range for a couple of years now. So I have started experimenting with some fresher ingredients. So banana and walnut muffins, which are dairy-free as well, and they're amazing. and also, like, with the butter prices going up ridiculously, we've looked at switching out butter for a different kind of oil. Mm. And because there's a different fat content in butter as opposed to oil, it's quite tricky to get the same consistency as that amazing classic flourless brownie. So I'm working on that. We're speaking to a national retailer at the moment. Very exciting. I've also...
Is that for own brand or for selling your brand?
Selling my brand, which is brilliant.
So, good girl.
Yeah, thank you. So the Food Talk Award definitely helps. And we did a show and we had the award out there and so many people were excited about it.
Good.
We just won a Great Taste Award for that today, good. Which is brilliant.
And
fantastic. Thank you. And we've just filmed a national television show, which is very exciting too.
Mm.
Blimey.
Yes.
So things are really, things are really taking off, really happening. How are you going to scale up?
Yeah, so, well, how am I going to... That's a great question. I've just done a round of investment, so I just went on a little holiday. I just got back last night.
with the investment money. It's like, thank you for investing in my business. This is me in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I was in
Tweet,
Ibiza.
Hashtag living the dream.
Yeah, hopefully the investors didn't look at my Twitter profile and see me having a great time. But so that's how we're going to scale up. So we've got some investment. We're investing in the site. We just got our Selsa accreditation, which means that that's what you need to supply a national retailer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so many exciting things are happening. We're recruiting at the moment as well. So I'm so excited about the future of the business.
Mm.
And as soon as this national television show airs, it's going to go crazy.
What is the show? Are you allowed to say?
I unfortunately can't. Confidential, signed an agreement.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Fair enough.
But do you know, one of the things I think is really exciting about this kind of thing is that this is not a London thing.
No.
Right?
No.
If 6% of the UK, avoiding gluten and wheat, that's quite a big chunk. If it increases to 11 amongst another one, it's, interestingly, 81% of committed foodies are outside of London. So I think at times we sort of think, these sort of, projects and stuff sit in London and major metropolitan areas. But actually that's not true. The kind of people that want to buy your brand are national.
Are everywhere.
Yeah. And actually, I don't think retailers have taken this stuff seriously enough.
We've got to get those products to them. Yeah, we've got to get those products to them.
And the whole category is growing as well. We've got some info here, which is that the sales of these free-from foods, they're forecast to grow about 13% in 2017 to $531 million.
Mm. Mm.
So it's a big deal.
And it's set to double by 2020, I believe.
Oh, really?
Mm. Mm.
Well, I'm afraid that's gone quickly again. Thank you so much for joining us, Sarah.
Thank you.
Just remind me, Pritesh, where do we find World of Zing products?
Easiest is online, but you'll see them in various premium stores, Whole Foods. Check out your local specialty shop. We're in about 100 retailers.
Wow.
And if you want to know more about it, it's worldofzing.com.
That's the one.
If you want to find anything out about Sarah's incredible, tasty brownies, which I don't even like brownies, but they are amazing. You need to go on to b-tempted.co.uk. And have you got them into other retail places?
Yes, we do. So we're in Harrods, Selfridges, Whole Foods and Fortnum & Mason.
Of course you're in Harrods and Fortnum &
Mason.
So
you're in the local supermarket. You're starting attainable.
Starting where you should. Well, thank you both of you so much for joining me. And also thank you to Guy Routledge, who just tucked away all the margarita while nobody was looking.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be a perk to the job.
You liked that, didn't you?
It was very good.
Yes. And also thank you to Ollie Lloyd, who enjoyed the... Well, you're into chilli, so you enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, I'm taking
all the chilli. You can just take it in your bag. You need to ask Pritesh first.
I'm sure I can donate it for the cause.
Be polite. You've been listening to the Food Talk Show, and we're in so many radio stations now, I can't even mention them. But if it's not on your local radio station, then just go to our website, which is foodtalk.co.uk, and you can download all the podcasts there. There's about 180, 200 or something. If you want to comment on anything we do or tell us off, that happens quite a lot. Please tweet at Food Talk Show, we'd be glad to sort of interact with you there. Just have a really good week this week. Bye bye.
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 Bye.